This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up? Welcome in. Happy Tuesday. We're Grant and Danny, and you are listening to The Fan. We have an outstanding show for you today. It's big. This is a George Mirasan show. At 3 o'clock, Noah Brown joins us. He caught the Hail Mary from Jaden Daniels to beat the Chicago Bears. At 5 o'clock, our weekly appointment with Austin Eckler via IT Cadre. Looking forward to talking to Austin today. And in the sandwich hour, right at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, we're giving away Caps tickets right here on Grant and Danny. Top of the afternoon tour, you sir.
What's up, brother? Big Tuesday. Big Tuesday for you, pal. We had, if I could say this, the A-team over for pickleball this morning. All right, Robert came over. He's nasty. You underestimate him. He's left-handed. Puts tons of spin on the ball. He's filthy. Cody and Dan came over.
Cody and Dan didn't come.
They both came over. High-level pickleball games this morning. Now I'm trying to rest and recuperate because I got basketball tonight. That's a lot. That's a big day for a 45-year-old pudgy dude.
Danny's like the elementary-aged kid on a Saturday who's got multiple games.
We just did it, yeah.
You're trying to run from one thing to the next.
I'd be a mistake. I don't know. The legs are barking a little bit. You guys just had me do. We got to put this on Instagram or something. The pretend hockey next to the boards puck battle and subsequent skate off bit that I do.
We have a huge glass panel window in our production room. I'll have to post this on Instagram, or maybe we'll do it live in one of the breaks. But we like to pretend like we're banging on the glass. And then Danny comes over using one of the putters that's in the studio for some reason.
Well, it's the closest thing to a hockey stick. We don't have one.
And then, well, I don't mean it's for some reason that you use it. I mean, for some reason it's here.
Oh, the putter's here. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But anyway, he uses the putter as a hockey stick to try to win a puck battle right up against the glass. So Ryan and Darius and I all bang on the glass while Danny wins a puck battle. But then he pretends to skate off.
You do the skate off bit.
And it sounds ridiculous and like a big waste of time and something we shouldn't be doing at work. And that's because it is. But it's a lot of fun.
It's a quality bit. We get it. Then the latest kind of iteration of it is we get everyone to try to do it.
Yeah.
To simulate it, you know? And it's harder to simulate than you think. It's harder to pretend to skate with shoes on carpet than you think it is.
Correct.
Yeah.
But if I could say this, you're very good at it.
Thank you.
One of your skills.
Yeah.
Maybe you could work that in after your basketball game.
Physical comedy.
Pickleball in the morning. Hoops after that. And then a competition where you pretend to be ice skating on carpet in tennis shoes.
You have to win the puck battle first, right? Because you're up against the boards. I mean, you got to like hold your own, wave the other guy off with a kind of a stiff arm or kind of, you know, you're jockeying for position. Maybe you're trapping the puck between that and your skate. Then you get the imaginary puck out. Then you got to fly out of the zone.
I don't want to let the cat out of the bag too soon, but my double play today at 3:45. I've got an update on the haircut that I got.
Oh, my God.
From the lovely young lady who I thought would make for a good dating partner for my buddy.
For somebody else. Yes.
I'm a married man. And I told my buddy to book an appointment with her, and he did, and he had that appointment.
He did have it.
So I will update you in the double play today.
I've got a very good Ryan Explains It All, which we'll do later, too. We tripped over it yesterday, but we were doing this whole like Washington won on a Hail Mary thing, which was a blast. So we did that, but I got it today. It's in the holster.
So it's going to be a good show.
Yeah.
We got a lot going on. You can watch us on 106.7 The Fan's YouTube page if you are at home. You can listen, of course, on your smart devices, on the Odyssey app, wherever you are. We are all over the DMV on 106.7 The Fan. But let's begin with Monday Night Football last night. You just heard Earl talking about this. The Steelers beat the Giants 26-18. The game, I would say for much of the evening, was actually really close. The Steelers did lead 23-9 with 13 minutes to go, and then the Giants got right back into it. So this was a competitive game that both teams could have, should have won, I suppose. But Russell Wilson's been good.
Yeah.
I've been impressed. I thought going to him was a mistake.
I did too.
Benching Justin Fields was the wrong decision. I'm not a Fields guy, never have been, never will be. Don't think he throws the ball well enough. But I think he presents enough problems running the football that he's a better player, maybe not passer, but better player at quarterback than Wilson. And this is why Mike Tomlin, who weirdly enough knew more about the Steelers than I did, made that decision to go to Russell Wilson. Two games, very small sample, but two pretty quality outings. He's got the passing game going. George Pickens matters at receiver again. Van Jefferson is making plays. They're a much better offense than they were a few weeks ago. And they're 2-0 now since the decision. They're 6-2 overall.
They are all of a sudden efficient on offense, dare I say, right? With the occasional big play. That Russell Wilson rainbow deep ball is, you know, now kind of part of their offense again, right? Where that seemed to have gone away in Denver. I don't know what exactly was going on there, but he was always been really good at that.
When's the last time he looked this good? Because the end
couple
of
years, at least.
End of Seattle, bad. Denver, bad. It felt like, because of his age and how long it had been, he had nothing left, and maybe in a month we'll be saying the same thing. But this is the best string of a couple games I think he's played. They also can run the ball. Najee Harris looks better than he has over the last few years.
Yep.
I think that offensive line's improved. They're creating more holes. He ran for a buck 14 last night, ripped off a near 30-yard run. Jalen Warren ran for 46 yards last evening as well, 5 a carry.
So that game is important to Washington for a number of reasons, but their next two opponents played last night, and now Pittsburgh's got a bye week and then Washington. I would rather they not have a bye week and then Washington.
Agreed.
I'd rather maybe they play this week or something else, but, you know, this is one of those things where one of Dan Quinn's mantras, and he's got a bunch, the anytime, anywhere, any place, anybody, any floor of the elevator and any slant of the field, doesn't matter, we're going to play you. Well, there you go. Pittsburgh's got an advantage coming into that game.
They will. The only thing I would say is you get to play the Giants on a short week, so you can't be angry about the bye week thing. Although, that's two times in 3 weeks they'll be playing a team off a bye.
And a good one, too. Like that's more my concern. Like
exactly.
You could play Carolina after a month off. I'd be happy.
Yeah, the Bears with a bye didn't seem to really take much advantage to the extra time, but I'm guessing that the Steelers coaching staff, a little bit different than the Matt Eberflus-led Chicago Bears. But the Giants are going to keep rolling with Daniel Jones after another loss. Malik Nabers 7 for 71 last night. He's outstanding, but they're just short on playmakers. I will say that this running back that they've unearthed here, their rookie 5th round pick Tyrone Tracy, he's a good little player.
Yes, he is.
I think they found something.
I mean, the burst is there. That's obvious. There's the quicks. He's good out of the backfield, former receiver. Fits the bill. But there's some power to his. There's some violence to it that you wouldn't expect. Maybe defenders aren't expecting it either, but he's running through tackles. I mean, there were several times where it's like, okay, this is a nice little burst of 5-6 yard gain that's now 12 or 13 because he's carrying bodies with him. Really impressive.
A lot of NFL news today to get to, including some breaking news in the NFL relevant to the region. We can get to that on 106.7 The Fan right now. Breaking news on The Fan brought to you by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the BetQL app or visiting BetQL.com. This via Adam Schefter of ESPN. The Baltimore Ravens have been seeking wide receiver help, and they may have just gotten it. Diontae Johnson traded to the Baltimore Ravens from the Carolina Panthers. Johnson is a PPR kind of volume assassin over the last several years in Pittsburgh and Carolina. Gets a lot of targets around the line of scrimmage. We just saw him catch only one ball against Washington. But the week before that, 6 for 78 and a touchdown against Atlanta. He goes to Baltimore, where he will be the number 2 receiver, presumably, to Zay Flowers, the latest of the moves in the NFL today. But I mentioned there was a lot of NFL news. So that's hot off the presses. That's breaking. We'll react to that in a second. Other moves just today in the NFL, other news. Anthony Richardson's been benched by the Indianapolis Colts. He was the number 4 pick last year. He's made 10 career starts because of injuries. They're benching him and going back to Joe Flacco. Pretty stunning. And then Stephon Diggs with the Houston Texans in year 1 in Houston, out for the year with a torn ACL. They were hoping maybe he avoided the ACL injury. He did not. He will be done for the season. So that's a Super Bowl contender losing their number 1 possession guy. Their number 1 wide receiver is Nico Collins, who's great. He's also hurt. He'll be back soon. But they lose Diggs. In the case of the Ravens, another Super Bowl contender, you add a wide receiver.
Yep.
And then the Colts feel like they can make the playoffs, but maybe not if Richardson's playing. So they go back to the veteran, Joe Flacco.
Start with the Colts first, last thing first. They're in the postseason if it started today. The bottom part of the AFC stinks. Cincinnati's 3-5, nipping on their heels, but it's the Dolphins, 2-5, Browns, 2-6, Raiders, 2-6. No threats there. The Colts, despite losing this past week, pretty close one to Houston, are 4-4 and in the postseason. So it's a weird thing, right, where you drafted a project and the project is there, needing to be projected. Like, there, he needs work. Everyone knew that kind of going in, but you don't really have time for that because you're a playoff team at this point. So they're right if they're trying to win games now. Flacco's better, which, again, we're still doing this, by the way, where Flacco's better somehow, either on his couch or as Billy the backup. But they're a better team when he's their quarterback, so they're going to it. It makes sense.
Let me clarify really quickly. Mm-hmm. If the playoffs started right now, they'd be out. They would be the eighth team in the AFC because the Chargers are 4-3. So the wild cards would be Denver, Baltimore, L.A. from the standings that I'm looking at.
I got them as the seventh seed here. What am I missing?
Well, the Chiefs, Texans, Steelers, and Bills are the division
leaders. There's three, yep. Ravens,
and
four.
And then the Broncos, Ravens, and Chargers at 4-3 are a half game better than the 4-4 Colts.
So it's 4, 5, 6. Then the seventh team is the Colts.
Chargers would be the seventh team.
I got them as that's the sixth team. That's not important. Either way, they're right there. They're in the playoff hunt.
Broncos, Ravens, Chargers. 5, 6, 7. Do you get what I'm saying?
Nope. Pro Football Reference just has them right there at number 7. You tell me what team I'm missing on that little list.
Okay.
I know this is not the point of the segment.
Yeah. Okay. So you have
what have I done wrong here?
The Chiefs, yep. The Texans.
You see all
the
seven
Bills,
of those teams. Yeah.
The Broncos, the Chargers, and the Colts. You're missing the Ravens.
Ravens are right there at number 4 on that list.
Okay. Do you have the Denver?
I sure do. They had 7 teams right there. I'm sure everybody's having a great time. I'm telling you.
Do you have the Chargers? You do.
Yeah, Pro Football Reference.
Do you have the Buffalo Bills?
I sure do.
Okay.
You'll see them.
Do you have the Pittsburgh Steelers? I don't see them there. The leaders of the AFC North.
You know who's wrong? Pro Football Reference is wrong.
Okay.
The Steelers are nowhere on this list.
I'm glad that we got that.
Dude, look at this. How wild is that?
I mean, it's wild.
It's Pro Football Reference.
It's fine.
Someone should notify them.
Okay.
They kicked the Steelers right out of the league.
They did. Point of the dude's story
wow.
is that doesn't really matter. They're a half game from the postseason at this moment,
uh-huh.
and it's solely because of the time that Flacco spent on the field, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole reason.
Yep.
So you have to give the team the best chance, and Richardson, let's just call it what it is, Danny. He's not good.
He's not good. He's not good.
I don't know if he'll ever be good. It's possible with his tools he could be, but right now he absolutely stinks.
Yeah, and I over-talk about this, but this is the, I can't believe this is who showed up. Like, he was always raw. Like, the point wasn't what he did in college, right? The statistical numbers weren't great. Now, the running was unbelievable. Some of the bulldozing and athletic scores are off the charts. It wasn't accurate. It wasn't a great advanced throw of the football just yet. The point was, you go, this is a raw piece of clay that could use some molding. Well, the problem is he went to a pretty good team that's kind of ready right now to compete with people. That doesn't really jive when it's project time and we don't need a project. We could probably use the boring, steady veteran to check it down a bunch, hand it to Jonathan Taylor, and get it to a couple playmakers.
I don't think he's getting benched solely because he's been playing so badly. I don't know if you'll follow me on this one or you disagree. He's completing, by the way, 44% of his passes.
Like, that's impossible in this day and age.
If you're not Tim Tebow, that should not be humanly possible. 44% of his passes, 4 touchdowns, 7 picks. He started this past week 2 for 13 as a throwing the football. He finished 10 of 32. Listen to this. His last two games, he is 10 of 24 and 10 of 32. How is that even a thing?
I don't understand it.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's 20 for 56 in 2024 where everyone's throwing the ball at the line of scrimmage. I can't even fathom it. But I bring this up to say, here's why I actually think he got benched. Do you know that he admitted after the game to taking himself out because he was tired?
Because
full Mike Shanahan, Donovan McNabb, cardiovascular
the cardio.
Endurance. He pulled himself out of the game, and everyone's going, was he injured? What was going on? What was wrong? What was the injury? I'm not going to lie, man. I was a little bit gassed. That's what he said.
Oof.
We have the audio of this post-game. This is the quarterback of the Colts saying the thing out loud that you really shouldn't say out loud.
Anthony, can you explain just you subbing out? Were you hurt? Were you injured? Were you tired?
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play. So I just, this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
I told Shane, meaning the offensive coordinator or the head coach, the play caller, Shane Steichen, I needed a break.
Mm.
This might be one of those things that someone could tell me is not as big a deal as it's being made out to be. I think this is the biggest deal. I've never heard of a quarterback taking himself out of the game for being tired. Ever. Ever. That tells me you're not in good enough shape. Right? Isn't that what that means?
That's pretty much it. That's the summary. And even if you are tired, I bet you the other guys are tired too.
I think you probably got to figure out a way to just play anyway. Play through it.
Yep.
Especially, you would think, anybody ever heard of the Wally Pipp story? Anyone know who Wally Pipp is? I'm going to tell the young people who Wally Pipp is. There's a guy named Lou Gehrig, okay? Lou Gehrig was a backup for the New York Yankees. Wally Pipp was the starter. The way the story goes, Wally Pipp comes in one day, isn't feeling very well. He's under the weather, takes himself out of the lineup, can't play. Lou Gehrig steps into the lineup in his stead, has a big game, plays the next day too. Has a big game again, they play him the next day. Lou Gehrig didn't come out of the lineup for 2,100...
For thousands of games.
And 30 straight games. 2,130 games in a row. Until Cal Ripken Jr. broke his record at 2,131 and eventually played in 2,632 straight games, the all-time record in Major League Baseball with the Baltimore Orioles. That was the record. And it all started because Wally Pipp took the day off and Lou Gehrig said, you'll never play again. If you're Anthony Richardson and you're already the second best quarterback in your building and everybody knows it.
Everybody knows.
But you get to keep playing because they drafted you in the top five. And you're playing in a game where you're completing less than 50% of the passes. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure Joe Flacco doesn't come out there. If Joe Flacco waddles out onto that field, I might not get back on that field. I cannot believe, A, that it happened, and what's a bigger deal than that is that he admitted it publicly. Let's say you just can't go. Maybe he's sick. I don't know all the details. Maybe he's throwing up and getting IVs, and he just can't do it. He's seeing stars, and he's doing what's right for the team. Let's just give him the benefit of the doubt that he's not just out of shape and tired. Okay, no problem. Never admit
that. Don't tell people that.
Tell them your contact fell out. And they go, but you don't have contact.
Exactly.
I do
Next
now.
Question.
Right. Tell them you had to go to the bathroom. Tell them that your rib was hurting. And just point to a general area like your Jaden Daniels. I don't care what you have to do or say. Tell them you were diagnosed with something by a doctor in your headset. And they won't believe you. And just tell them that anyway. They don't need to know. What you can't say is that you were tired and that you went to the coach and asked out of a football game. You can't do that.
That's not for me. I know that we've come a long way since Bull in the Ring and Oklahoma drills and, you know, headbutt the wall and, you know, waters for weaklings and all the rest of it, right? We've come an awful long way. There's still remnants and there's still vestiges of this sport of the ultimate tough person, right? It's up there. Hockey, football, wrestling. Not the kind of Monday nights for entertainment, but like actual wrestling where guys get cauliflower ear and don't mind. You know what I mean? Like that type of stuff where you can't eat for 6 days to make weight and you're dehydrated, but you got to go grapple somebody with 1% body fat.
My brother, I'm sure this is healthy in high school, on the high school wrestling team, used to wear a trash bag on his skin.
Right.
And then put sweatshirts and sweatpants and all kinds of stuff on to go for runs and then spit into a bottle all day so he could make weight. I'm sure that's healthy in high school.
Right. Tough guys, you know, Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook, right? Trying to drop it. There's still a level of that where I can't have you admit that you're like a little sleepy or that you're a little peaked. You're like, I'm a little tired. I'm out of breath. Especially not the guy that's supposed to be leading us into the breach. You know, we're trying to, this is a divisional. This isn't week 17 where the season's over.
No.
That's the team. You win that game, you're tied for first place in your division. They would have been tied for first place with the Houston Texans had they won both 5-3. Like, I can't have that.
Would he have been benched today if that moment didn't happen in the presser? I think no. I know he's been god-awful and Flacco's better. I get that. I think that was part of it. I think this is a, wait, what's going on with this guy kind of let's stop and reassess moment.
I think it was the cherry. You know what I mean? I think you're contemplating it. You're going, we're right there. Not in the playoffs, actually. Just I want to be very clear about that because Pittsburgh. Anyway, but we got a shot at it. We're not out of it by any stretch. Nobody behind us is catching us, and we're a game behind some of these teams. We're pretty good, and we're better with this guy. But how long can we be patient for? Think about the long term. I think that kind of knocks the long term aside.
44.4% completion percentage. Since 2014, minimum of 125 attempts, the worst we've seen in a decade of NFL football. The names at the bottom of that list are Drew Stanton with the Cardinals, Jalen Hurts early in his career, his first year with the Eagles, Josh Allen, remember, early on, super inaccurate. So I guess there's hope. Cam Newton had a year where he was at 52.9%. DeShone Kizer, Mike Glennon, David Blau was on Washington's coaching staff. Old friend Taylor Heineke last year.
Hey.
In Atlanta, 54.4%. That's still 10% better at that point than Richardson, one of two guys under 50% over the last 10 years this far into a season. Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Hail Mary was amazing. We're going to talk to Noah Brown about it today at 3 o'clock. If you take that play out of the equation, though, I think there are some conversations that can and should be had about Washington's game against the Bears. A lot to like, but there was plenty not to like that they got to clean up if they're going to be a division champion. Let's get into that next on the Fan. He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Welcome back, and thank you for making the show part of your day. Noah Brown joins us in 30 minutes. Can't wait to talk to him about the Hail Mary touchdown he caught from Jaden Daniels to beat the Bears. Austin Eckler's on the show at 5. We'll get his vantage point. He was also on the field, throwing blocks, throwing his weight around, making sure that Jaden Daniels had enough time. There were 13 seconds that he bought there. So Austin Eckler had to block a couple of dudes.
That's right.
We'll ask him about that at 5 o'clock today on G&D. We spent most of the show yesterday discussing just how amazing the win was, how incredible the Hail Mary was. There's a lot of other areas of the game we could tend to, and they're not all pretty. I think for the most part, it was a effort that Washington can feel good about. It was a winning game. They deserved to win more than the Bears did, in my opinion. Not everything was clean either.
No, certainly not. You start to look into it. Two timeouts squandered because they were going to take penalties. Multiple penalties that were assessed at key spots, especially in the red zone, that were procedural stuff, that was just focal points. That was just like, remember the snap count. Or, you know, I mean, these they're so persnickety now about an eligible man downfield. But, you know, I think both were the right calls when it happens. But still, like, let's not have that happen, right? Because especially when they're that far away from the play. Then you add up the number of declined penalties. And as I said, the ones that they avoided by timeout usage, which came into play. Ultimately, doesn't matter because you have the miracle. But a few things process-wise that are, I don't say cause for concern, but it wasn't all great. Because if you take a recipe, minus the Hail Mary, 430 yards, the time of possession they had, the you know, defensive, you shut them out in the first half, they don't score till late in the third quarter, you need to win that game handily. And there were signs of cracks. Again, the Bears are a good football team, but that's kind of the only thing I would say is, hey, that's a little bit cause for concern here. Has something been taken away or have adjustments been made, especially when it comes to the red zone? Because again, historically, Kingsbury's teams haven't been great there in the red zone in terms of his offense and the efficiency. We've seen this once already with that Giants game. So just, I'm not saying, oh my God, it's a disaster, they suck. Not the case, that's a good team. But just raising my hand going, did we notice that?
Yeah, they've played two pretty good defenses and they've struggled in the red zone in both games. Pretty substantially.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tell. Yeah, that's an area where you got to be better, obviously. Also, I said this yesterday, it is time to recalibrate the way that we view and critique and analyze the team, too. If they were just happy-go-lucky, struggling in the red zone sometimes, but you know, they're a 4-4 team and things are trending up and they got off to a bad start, but the offense is coming out of a slumber. I don't know that we have the same conversation. They're 6-2. They're leading the division. They're every bit as good as anybody else in the conference, maybe outside of Detroit at this point. They are a legitimate playoff contender and a team that could win playoff games. So it is time to start not looking around and going, man, I'm just happy to be here. I'm so lucky to be 6-2. This is kind of fun. And to start thinking about, well, how could they have been 7-1? Or how do they make sure that they're 6-2 in their next 8 games? And then, lo and behold, this team that hasn't won 11 times since I was in a diaper is 12-4, right? And the big area for them to improve on offense is the red zone. obviously. Mm-hmm. Look at the numbers. They're third overall yards per play. They're second in rushing. They're fourth in passing. They're fifth at not throwing interceptions. They are middle of the pack, 18th sacks per pass attempt. That's a little lower than I'd like, considering they're getting pretty good pass protection, but you'll take it, not a problem. They're third in first downs per game. They are in almost every category. You know, first downs, they are fourth. Third down percentage, getting first downs, they are fourth. Fourth down percentage, converting, they are first. The one area where they are bad on offense is the red zone. They're 24th right now.
And so think of the early drives. I mentioned the Jay Gruden yesterday. He kind of, you know, just sort of shrugged and said, yeah, not really that big a deal. Maybe they thought they had something. But to me, when they got down there, there were a lot of slow developing sort of straight ahead power runs to Brian Robinson. And nothing wrong with that inherently, but I'm going, that's not what makes their run game special. It's the one guy's going one way, the other guy's going the other way. No one knows which way it's going. And Brian Robinson's got a head of steam and it feels quicker. Those felt really... Jaden Daniels takes the snap, meanders back, hands it off. Robinson gets it with his feet set 7 yards behind the line, trying to make a push. Chicago's there. And they deserve credit, too. That's a pretty good front, and they did a good job. But there just didn't seem to be much, I don't want to say creativity, but trying to work the edges or trying to find some sort of mismatch. It was like, let's push them around. I didn't love that. Now, again, it's easy to say when it doesn't work. When it does work, I'm going, great call, play smash mouth. So just again, working back from a result.
Yeah, I think that's certainly how it appeared on Sunday, and maybe that is the case. I thought they did some of the same conceptual things to get down there. Like, Brian Robinson was mauling Chicago on a couple of those drives, and they just tried to let him finish what he started. I'd have to go back and look. Was there more jet action or eye candy or things behind the line? Maybe that's the case, and they just went to a little more traditional power. But to me, it just looked like they tried to finish the drive off how they got down there, and the Bears bowed up a little bit, as you'd anticipate. Mm-hmm. What's interesting to me, though, is what you are taught early on is if you're going to be a really good red zone team, you've got to be what? A really good running team. That is the logic. The theory is the better running team you are, the better you are in the red zone. They're exceptional running the football.
Really good.
Jaden Daniels, think about some of the edge keepers that he's had, either the designed runs, some of naked boots, but or just the same play they ran like three times to score and get down to the goal line. Couple other times where you get the pulling Sam Cosmi out in front and he just keeps it to the pylon. You would think with a quarterback that's a threat with his feet like him and a running game like they have, that they would be a juggernaut in the red zone. Those Cam Newton teams when he had a bunch of rushing touchdowns. Like that, you couldn't. Lamar Jackson, I bet you look at Baltimore more years than not. They get down to the red zone. They're great. This year, by the way, I'm just going to look because I have not looked this up, so maybe I look like a fool. They're number one in the red zone, the Ravens.
Oh.
So, I mean, my point is, like, the running quarterback is normally the cheat code. So it is very odd to me. I don't know why they've struggled so much. It might be, you could say, maybe that's where you could use another weapon. But you've got the size of Ertz going up the ladder. You saw him almost make a leaping touchdown catch this week. You've got the size of Noah Brown they haven't really tried to take advantage of. McLaurin's outstanding down around the goal line. We've seen plenty
catches
of that
in traffic for sure
this
year.
So I don't think of it as a weapon issue. Like, if it was about size, then they would be throwing to the guys that are bigger. They haven't really tried to do that. I do think their offense, their passing game in general, Daniels is throwing normally to open guys, and it's not as anticipatory. Like, it's not a timing thing a lot of the time as they're breaking. It's like, hey, he ran this dig or this crosser or whatever, and he's standing there. Let's throw it to him. It's also very horizontal, which doesn't work as well as you get down near the end zone.
You think about between the 20s, where if somebody's, there's routes heading into all three tiers, the short, intermediate, and maybe deep, then all of a sudden that swing pass to Austin Eckler is really, really damaging. Not the case when everybody's within, 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, a.k.a. the goal line.
So let's pose this question for people. Why do you think they've struggled in the red zone, and how should they fix it? 800-636-1067. I don't know if people will like this. I would run Jaden Daniels more in the red zone, at least for a week or two, to just show that and have teams petrified about it, especially in goal to go. When you get down to the 10, the 9, the 8-yard line, and as you said, you give it to Robinson and everyone's kind of funneling to stop him. He keeps it around the edge a couple times. I think that'll soften some things up for them. They're 19th, by the way, in goal to go offense this year. This should be a top 10 at worst, probably top 5 group in goal to go. And they've also, I think this has to be acknowledged, I'd have to look up the numbers. It feels like they've committed a million penalties in the red zone. As soon as they got into the red zone, the game where they struggled the most, was that the Giants?
The Giants, where they, yeah, nothing but field goals.
I want to say on like four possessions in a row, they committed a red zone penalty. And that happened again this week.
Yes.
That might be the big, we're trying to figure out, is it play calling? Is it design? Is it personnel? It might just be you commit too many penalties down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly a huge one, right? I mean, I think one of them was on after a 9-yard run on first down, this is goal to go. You're at second and one, I want to say, from the one. Then you back up 5 yards.
Killer.
Then that negative one to Robinson all of a sudden pretty much ends the drive and it's incomplete pass, field goal. So, you know, it's the first possession. Nobody cares. Nobody really thinks about it. But as you're going, man, you just march down the field and it feels a little empty coming up with three there.
How would you fix the red zone issues? Do you think this is something that they can alleviate in the next couple of weeks? 800-636-1067. Also, any other concerns, little wrinkles that need to be ironed out? They're 6-2. They're really good. How do they get better? We're Grant and Danny on The Fan. I'm looking at the return for the Carolina Panthers by trading Deontay Johnson. And Deontay Johnson is a free agent to be, so you weren't going to get a lot. But they basically did a pick swap to move up 15 spots from the early sixth round to the fifth round. So you get rid of your best wide receiver for the remainder of a season where your young quarterback, Bryce Young, is going to be playing a bunch, whether he's the starter permanently or not right now. By the end of the year on this bad team, he's going to be the starter for several games. And you got 15 draft slots to do it? That's
and
a terrible return.
They're paying pretty much the rest of his salary this year, I read. So, like, again, I will, God willing, 100 years old, sitting up, you know, with all my loved ones surrounding me on my deathbed, and I'll hear about an NFL trade, and I'll go, I don't understand. And that'll be the end. I'll never get it. I will never get it right what somebody's worth. All I know is I want that kind of deal, whether you want Deontay Johnson or what. I don't care. But I want that one where that's all they had to give up for him. I want that. I want one of those here. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, they've had a few of those recently with Adam Peters, I feel like, where they got more than you thought they might. Like the Sam Howell trade, I thought was amazing that they pulled off looking back.
I just mean I want to get the player. Like I go, hey, that's an impactful player. Then the guy plays well for the team, and it's like he was acquired for that. I want that. But you're right.
They haven't been in that mode yet, but now that they might be in the acquiring players mode, maybe that's coming. As we welcome you back in to Grant and Danny, the question for you guys on the MGM National Harbor listener lines is, why have they struggled so much in the red zone? 800-636-1067. I think that the way that they operate as a passing offense is not necessarily conducive to getting a lot of like free looks, free releases, getting up the field vertically from the 15, the 18, down toward the goal line, number one. And I think they do have that horizontal passing attack, and they're often throwing the ball to guys who are open and not necessarily into like windows down the field. I think that's all part of it from a passing standpoint. But what I can't quite grasp and what I can't figure out or get past is they're such a good running team, and Daniels is so good as a rusher. How is that not equated to more red zone offense? I think it's coming. I think it's going to fix itself, and more sample will help them to do that.
So I think between the 20s, when there's more space, they're able to scheme a lot of things open, et cetera. I think when you get down, there's not as much space. They got guys that can win physically. Like, I don't think Ertz is separating from anybody at any point in time. I don't think McLaurin's a great separator at this stage. He's a great player, but I think they could really use someone who could, in a confined space, make some.
I'm not going to put the struggles on Daniels, but I think the fix is on Daniels. I think great quarterback play can be a great benefit in the red zone. That's where you need your guy to extend plays, to get out of the pocket. You know, it felt like going back to the Cousins years. If the design was there when you had first and goal,
it's gonna work great.
From the 10, it's a touchdown. But if I need him to get out of the pocket and buy time and create, you can remember a few plays over the years against Cleveland or something where he's like extending and scores. It was just so rare. That should be more normal. That should be something Daniels can do. And when you get out of the pocket and reset, all of a sudden, now it's just plastering. Everybody's spraying different directions. That's where guys get really open. I think he needs to do more of that down near the goal line. Let's go to Brandon in Woodbridge on G&D. How are you?
Hey, buddy. How are you guys doing?
Come in.
Respect, respect. I was just thinking, Daniels is hurt. He has his ribs messed up, and that's the main reason why they didn't do it this particular game. And the only other game that they weren't in the red zone and were successful was the Giants game, and that's pretty much the only game that we can go to. Other than that, they have been pretty successful in the red zone. And the other thing is, I don't understand why everybody in the league's running back always wants to rush it right down the middle with 10 people sitting there waiting for you to tackle. I'm waiting for the dude to run it in the middle with one running back in the backfield. Back in the day, they had two running backs. They would fake it to one running back, run a play action, and throw it to the other guy, if not the quarterback running it in.
You're spreading teams out, right? So you don't want the two backs in the backfield. You're trying to get into 11 personnel with three receivers, or basically buy more space in the middle for your back by spreading teams out. Appreciate the call. Just got a tweet sent to me here from Delta who says, it's a stat from Kingsbury in Arizona. 2019 to 2022, 51.7% of offensive plays in the red zone were runs, eighth highest in the league during that time. And I'd have to look to see where he ranks right now. But I think you got to put a little bit more on Daniel's plate down there. Like, let him make a play or two for you.
Yeah, think of the Arizona game, right? Where it's student body, right? But that Daniel's sort of pistol, and he just, you know, the whole play is designed for him to run to the right. There's a whole wall of blockers out there. Now, when they've run that since, it's been defended pretty well. People kind of saw it coming. So what's your counter?
Well, but they've gotten yards every time. He's gotten inside the five the other two times they've done it. But I don't even mean as a ball carrier, which is also true. I mean as a passer.
Yep.
I want to put more on his plate. You shouldn't be running 60% of the time in the red zone. You know, let's even it out closer to 50-50 like the rest of the league was during that era of those 3 years we're talking about there. And maybe let's say, hey, let's get creative. Don't be afraid to go off schedule down here. That's where you make your money, third downs in the red zone. Let's go to Rod in D.C. What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, man.
Man, I wasn't able to get in yesterday, but I was so excited. I loved the program yesterday.
Amazing. Oh, thanks, buddy.
Well, thank you. We had fun.
But I think we should get some drag action going. Get Luke. Let's rub some pick routes. Rub routes. Something. I do agree with you, Grant, with getting JD involved. Even if we do a naked boot, get a little naked booty and have somebody come dragging around.
Yep.
And we got the linebackers coming up, and then we got a wide open, you know, tight end or Luke. Let's get Luke more involved too. I want to see Luke some more. Get Luke some tutties, man.
I'm with you. You're speaking my language. Thank you, buddy. Chocolate lava cake for everybody. What he said there that I love the most, and I think this is true, Danny, it seems to me like there's got to be a way I can figure out where this data is. Maybe True Media. I guarantee they run fewer pick plays and rub routes and like that kind of stuff to free guys up than the average team does. And that's basically what teams major in down near the goal line. I know they do some of it. I've seen some of it. I just don't know how much of a staple it is.
Like, more of it. If you watch San Francisco, they'll put on a clinic.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Chris Collinsworth guffawing on the telecast the other night where it's like, I mean, if that's legal, you're going to see a lot of teams. Because like the receiver on the outside, she's like, oh, I'm falling down. Oh, no, turbulence. Just barrels into the inside corner for an easy touchdown for George Kittle. And they're like, yeah, we didn't see anything. Like, try that.
Chris in Hyattsville, what's up?
What's up? You know, Danny made quite an astute point, and I want to point that out.
What?
Is that, yeah, it happened.
No.
Kingsbury's offense, as we've seen all year, is really good 20-20, but that's because it's predicated on space and separation, right? And they've thrived in that way. But when you get inside the red zone, particularly when you're like in a goal-to-goal situation, all that space is compressed. So you don't have the opportunity to run all these, you know, crossing routes and so on. And I feel like he's just like, you know, like the kids say, he's not in his bag in that situation. And I feel like a simpler approach with a commitment to, you know, like Brian Robinson, who is a beast, who can just pound the ball in the end zone. He's been effective his entire career doing so, would probably pay more dividends than what he's been running.
Chris, how old is your son?
He's 15, so I am deep, deep into the jargon.
I was literally about to say, you can tell
you
my
hear
guy
so much.
Has a teenage son. I feel like every call he's introducing, he's like, as the kids say, some new lingo. He must just hear it all the time.
Well, I have an 11-year-old. I hear it nonstop.
Yeah.
Like, he told his younger brother last night that that's cap. And I'm like, come on. Really? Are we?
Well, it is cap, probably.
It probably was. Who knows?
Did you hear Kirko change his pregame routine with the Falcons? He's, like, shouting out there, repeating after him, and he said no cap a few times?
No.
I'm dead serious.
That's tough.
I'll show the video.
That's a little cringy.
Noah Brown, wide receiver, Washington Commanders. You know him as the guy that caught the Hail Mary.
The Hail Mary guy?
He is on the show next. Please spread the word. Send a text to a buddy. Send the link to the show if you want to get brownie points and bonus points. Noah Brown next on The Fan.